Here's our hockey analyst joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline, Ray Ferraro. What's up, Ray?
I saw the Stones at Dodger Stadium in 1997, I think. Like 1997. And we're like, wow, Mick can still move around. That was in 97.
I know. Honestly, they were like basically wax statues in the 90s. And this is 20 years later. And like I've joked about this, but it's true. Like I've seen them a couple of times, and this is 10, 12 years ago. I honestly don't think Keith Richards had his guitar plugged into his amp. I think he was just cruising around, like walking around with a guitar. And it was like, awesome. This is great. There's Keith. And that was 12 years ago.
Well, you got to hand it to him. He's not drinking anymore. So, you know, I mean, yeah. I don't know. Maybe. Can you imagine what had been piped through that body over the years?
Well, my understanding is now he's got some clinic somewhere in like South America or somewhere in Europe, I guess, and he just goes in like every 6 months and all of his blood gets leaked out, basically, and it's a full blood transfusion. Like it's like an oil change. This guy, you drop him off and you pick him up in a couple of hours and he's just got new blood. Like, that's normal.
Do they have one of those car lifts that lifts them up to the guy?
Yeah, he goes to Costco, and they're like, here, we'll have you with a full new body of blood by the end of the afternoon. It must cost him a fortune.
Yeesh.
Yeah, that doesn't sound healthy. But if he's still kicking at 75, so good for him. I want to get your take on, you know, coaching in general. There's the story in Toronto the past couple of days with the Raptors was Nick Nurse kind of sticking up for his guy Kawhi Leonard a couple of nights ago. And when you actually look at the stats, Kawhi goes to the line a lot. It's not like he never gets to the line. But Nurse felt obligated to stick up for him, and he got fined $15,000. And Kawhi said today, you know, it's always great to see that your coach has your back and sees it the same way that you do, and the other players were paying lip service to that. But how much truth do you place in that, the idea of a coach, you know, blasting the officials on your behalf? I mean, how much tangible value is there in that?
Well, I think it would make you feel like you're all pulling on the same rope, right? Like that you probably feel like you're getting fouled, or in the NHL's case, their guys are hooking and holding you all the time, and it gets frustrating. And, you know, so to have somebody that's not, you know, standing, you know, in the same skates, you know, your coach to go out and say that, it validates your frustration a little bit, I would say. I don't think anybody expects any great change. I'm sure whoever's officiating the Oilers game tonight isn't going, oh, I better call three hooking penalties against McDavid or Hitch is going to be mad at me. You know, I like to think they don't really worry about that. But I don't know that it's anything earth-changing that, or earth-shaking that changes when a coach comes out like that.
I wonder how much, you know, an effect a coach can have in lobbying refs. Because I think Nick Nurse does that as much for that moment and to let the player know he has his back, especially a player like Kawhi, who you're trying to woo as a free agent come July. But, Ray, I mean, if you let's say Mike Babcock, whose team has been on the power play less than any other team in the 31-team NHL, right? The Leafs are dead last in power play time. Can he have any tangible effect on trying to draw more penalties over the long haul of a season?
I think the only thing you can do is just continually point it out. But I think this is better done from Kyle Dubas to the league office.
Yeah.
When you embarrass somebody, do you think you're going to get the benefit of the doubt? Like, Babs is hard on the official. Like, he's hard on them. I stand right there. But a lot of times he's not wrong, and he finishes and always kind of, he doesn't say thank you, but whatever's next door to thank you, it's kind of like, okay. You know, like, thanks for letting me say my piece. I'm done. But he never complains publicly, I don't think, about the officials.
We have occasionally tried to bait him on that, be pointing out that they don't draw a lot of penalties. In fact, they draw the fewest in the league, and he really refrains from that. So he must subscribe to that point of view.
Because see, I look, I yelled and screamed and complained at officials my entire career. It took me until about 15 years in. I'm a real quick learner that, gee, maybe because I tell this guy he sucks every night, that he might not give me a penalty. Yeah. Or he might not give me a call. Like, what a brilliant strategy that was. And so, like, some guys never said anything. And I don't know if they got more calls than I did or not. I just know, looking back, that it was really the wrong tack to take. To publicly go after an official really doesn't do you a whole lot of good, I don't think, because the only thing that's going to happen is the official gets embarrassed or he gets angry, and he's not going to help you out. He's a human too, right? He's going to go, yeah, it's a close call, whatever, and it's, off you go.
It's interesting, though, Ray, because there are people in the NBA – and I don't know how much this transfers to the NHL, because you're rinkside. I don't hear the chatter in the NHL as much as you hear about it in the NBA. But like LeBron starts complaining coming down the tunnel, like, you know what I mean?
Immediately,
like, he lobbies refs before the game begins, and he never stops. Right, like, that's just who
but
he is.
Sure, though, Dave, because I think it's fair to say that the star players get a different set of rules than the schlep that comes off the bench at number nine.
Sure.
Right? So LeBron can lobby. Like, if Connor McDavid starts to complain all the time, or Austin Matthews, or pick any star, if they're complaining all the time, I don't think it's going to help them at all. The NBA is officiated differently, for sure.
Well,
I wish the NHL had... I wish the standard doesn't slip over the course of the year. You know, I wish what was a penalty in October is a penalty in May. In my book, that's the way it should be. It doesn't work like that very often.
It's an interesting question, though, in the NHL. Like, who is the most boisterous superstar in the league? Like, there's no one that comes to mind. Crosby had
a reputation for being very yappy, especially when he was young. Didn't he not, Ray?
But that was more against the opponents, wasn't it? Like, it was.
I think Sid had this reputation that he was complaining all the time about everything, and I think it was, my opinion was, it was always pretty unjust. So he was an emotional kid, which he's not a kid anymore, and he complained a lot. I'll tell you, you hear this line more than any other to an official. A play will happen, the guys get up, now they're behind the play, and the guy that thinks he got fouled yells, "Wake the F up." I bet you I hear that 5 times a game. And the ref might tell him to beat it, or he might ignore him. Right? Like, I don't think it even matters. So you can complain all you want, but a star complaining to the press, or, you know, making a scene on the ice, that never happens.
No, it never does.
I mean, I remember, you know, when Gretzky called the Devils a... You know, it was called the NHL a garage league, and Lemieux called them a garage league, and Gretzky said the Devils were a Mickey Mouse organization.
Right.
That was like 35, 40 years ago almost. I think 35 years ago. Like, none of the stars really say much, and they would be the ones that if they felt like it, they'd be the ones that would have the leeway to do it.
Yeah. Like, yo, I mean, Jeremy Roenick was famous for it. Now, he was a star for sure, maybe superstar too. I mean, he's borderline Hall of Famer, but that was just in his personality. You know, it was just, he was going to give you an answer, and if he was rattled, he was going to, you know, I guess Patrick Waugh did that a little bit, you know, to an extent. I guess he would be kind of.
I think Roenick's a really good example, because, you know, JR would get heated after a game, and the one where he got smacked in the face, he's like, "Look at my face." Like, he was just ragging on the official. It's actually a great interview. Unfortunately, he got, you know, high stuck and had his face sliced open. But he was sour that the penalty wasn't called.
Yeah.
And he was right.
He was. Yeah, that was his famous NHL wake up, you know, diatribe. And again, I don't know how it affected the way he was called the next night. I would guess it probably didn't affect it at all. But he was willing to get it off his chest, which was refreshing. But that's going back 20 years ago. Yeah, it just doesn't happen.
This thing with Hitch the other day with McDavid, I watched the game. I found it really odd that was the game that he came out to say about all this egregious refereeing and treatment of McDavid, because I didn't really notice it in that particular game. Now, they lost, and I heard Gord on Leafs lunch saying, I'd love a coach to come out and complain after they win. Like, that would be novel. And he's right. Like, you know, Hitch, they lost the game. And, you know, and he came that time to come out and say, oh, McDavid doesn't get the calls. But I just thought it was oddly timed. Because in the particular game I was watching, I didn't really see much.
With Ray Ferraro, speaking of, you know, penalties, and obviously people are focused on the power play for the Leafs recently, and it's dried up a bit, but I'm not concerned about that personnel at all. I think they've been a little bit unlucky. I think they're going to figure that out. The penalty kill is a little bit different. You know, the personnel is a little bit different, specifically Hainsey, Zaitsev, the amount of ice that they're getting. Those guys are getting chewed up a little bit more. Freddie Anderson is cooled down a little bit. I think he'll obviously kind of even out and be fine in the end. But what do you make of, you know, the focus on the special teams recently, and any concerns when it comes to the Maple Leafs?
Well, part of it, I guess, is, wouldn't you say, is the ebb and flow of the season. You're one group hot, then they cool off, then the next group's hot. I mean, nobody's going to be really good start to finish in either grouping. The penalty kill, I would be more concerned than the power play. I would like to see the power play be a little bit more unpredictable. And maybe we saw a little bit of it where Marner shot the puck. If he does that a little bit more, what's going to end up happening is the high forwards won't sag down onto Kadri in the slot, take away the tip play. So if I'm penalty killing against the Leafs, I'm sagging the guy nearest Marner, I'm sagging him down towards Kadri, and I'm having the other forward making sure that puck doesn't go across to Matthews. And then they can do whatever they want after that. They want to go back to Riley, good, let him shoot it. I don't want Matthews shooting it. If Marner wants to shoot it, good, let Marner shoot it. But the more that Marner shoots, the more that they go down to Tavares and have him attack from the goal line, the teams will have to be a little more honest. I think it's that simple, guys, to the power play starting to click again, is to become just a little more unpredictable so they can't take away the two real bread and butter plays. The penalty killers, the concern for me is that they get beat on the entry too much. That means they spend more time in their zone. And the entries, when you got Hainsey and Zaitsev, they're going to get beat on entries. They get beat out wide with speed, and a lot of times that's what, you know, allows you to set up quick and get organized in the zone. Now you got to run around and race around your zone, and if your goalie's not great, sometimes it ends up in the net. So those are concerning points to me, and I thought in one of the interviews I read with Dubas the other day that, you know, they mentioned about they've got cap space and trying to improve the team all the time and a little bit of focus towards the defense. To me, it's plain as the nose on our faces. I mean, that's the area that has to get improved.
Well, it would be interesting to see what kind of an effect adding a really credible defenseman could have, Ray. Like, how do you, like, if you could move Ron Hainsey down the depth chart into the third pairing, and you had somebody to play with Riley who was a lot more credible? Because you saw with Riley in that Florida game, when he's paired with Jake Gardiner, suddenly he looks like a different player than when he's carrying Ron Hainsey around the rink, right?
Well, Hainsey's put in a position here that's almost impossible for him to fulfill, in my opinion, and be successful, and that is as a top pair player.
Yeah.
If you move him down the depth chart, not only does he play less minutes, he plays against different caliber players. And I think he can still be really effective against third and fourth line players. I think it's a uphill slog where they got him playing. So to add a player that can move, a player that can move the puck, I think it makes a big difference to this Toronto team. Now you got to go find him, and you've got to be willing to pay in an asset, because you're not going to get one of these guys for nothing.
Yeah, I feel like there is potential for a lot of moving parts with this team. You know, we're so focused on the core guys, and obviously Nylander dictated that conversation for so long because he was negotiating and he wasn't here. But now it's going to be Matthews and Marner. But, you know, you look at Kyle Dubas, he is just kind of getting rolling here. Like, he has not been in this seat very long, and he hit the ground running with the Tavares stuff, and that kind of fell in his lap, but I don't, you know, I'm not going to take anything away from him. He obviously pursued it, and he played a big role in the courting process. But the Nylander stuff didn't go the way he wanted to, or the way anyone wanted to. And I'm sure Nylander would say the same thing, even though he got his money in the end. He didn't want to have to wait until the last second. But there's a chance. I mean, I don't know if Zaitsev's here next year. You know, Kapanen, Janssen, they've got guys. They've got RFA deals coming up. And yeah, I know what you're going to say. Who's going to take
Zaitsev? Who's going to take Zaitsev contract?
I understand that. And it's not going to be easy.
It's $4 million.
Yeah. Oh, for like five more years.
Yeah, but what if they take back 1.5 of it?
Yeah.
Right? Like, Zaitsev's number's a little different. You look, any player, if their number's different, it looks a lot better. Because they signed him right after that first year. Don't forget, he played on the power play. He had a whole whack of assists that first year. Now he looks pedestrian. Last year he was hurt and sick, and then I thought he really took a step back last year.
Yeah, he did.
This year, he looked terrible.
As much as Babcock keeps propping him up and saying, he stops the cycle, and I don't see it as much as maybe Babcock does or projects that he does. And so so if you go in, we go into this lineup of players and you get into Gardner, you get into Zaitsev, and you get into Hainsey, that defense next year, it is an absolute joker's wild what that thing might look like.
It could go anywhere. It really could. Because, I think even what Dubas had to say about, he didn't name one player in particular, but he spoke to the media yesterday and he said, if the puck movement doesn't start picking up on the back end, and that just screams Zaitsev. Like the amount of times Zaitsev just either, wraps it around the boards when he's got time or flicks it into the neutral zone, just based on what we've seen and what we've heard out of Dubas and what he wants to see out of his players, that goes against everything he philosophically believes in.
Well, Mike Babcock has a saying. I haven't heard him use it lately, but he has a saying. I've heard him say it quite frequently about the puck possession. He said, I'm most interested when you've got the puck, who's got it next? And so it's not a turnover in the league stats if you take the puck and shoot it off the glass to center ice. Well, to me, it is. If you have the puck on your stick and your best place to flip it up in the air to the other defenseman, on the other team, to me, who's got it next?
Right.
They do. And so that doesn't – Zaitsev doesn't move it as well as I remember him moving it the first year. Last year was a train wreck. And even this year, if you're not going to be really physical, you've got to bring something. And I don't know exactly what he's best at right now. So what about a guy like, what about if you call Chicago and ask about Duncan Keith?
Yeah.
He's got a manageable contract. I think he's $5 million is his contract.
Yeah, it is.
You would trade somebody back. You're not looking at him to play 27 minutes a night. You're in the 21, 22 range. That would be the type of guy I think would be super interesting if they can get involved in a discussion like that. Because that might solve a couple of their problems at once.
But 35 years old, Ray, he's got 1, 2, 3, 4 more years at $5.5 million. You think that's a value play?
Well, I don't know if it would be a value play. So what are you looking for, Dave? Are you looking for Roman Josi?
Well,
you're not getting
no. I'm not aiming quite that high.
No, but,
when you go younger, if you could?
Sure. So what team's going to say, hey, Toronto, I've got a defenseman that can play in your top pair. He's young, too. He's the guy for you.
Yeah, we'll take Zaitsev, too. That sounds like
right.
What
well,
I'm looking
the,
for.
So but
this is the reason I bring up a player like Keith. It's got to be somebody that's potentially available. Like, this happens all the time. Well, you've got to do something about your goaltending. I just had an argument yesterday with a guy about this. He's like, they've got to do something about their goaltending. This is another team. I said, okay, who would you go get? And he said, well, I would target Henrik Lundqvist. I go, he's already said he's not leaving New York. He's got a no move. I said, well, I would target him. Good, target him. Call him 150 times. Call Santa Claus while you're at it. You're not.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and that gets so carried away because people focus on the position. They just start yelling about this. We need, and even the I keep hearing, well, top four. Zaitsev's technically in the top four. Hainsey's in the top four. Yes. There's a substantial difference between Morgan Riley and Nikita Zaitsev. They're both in the top four. You know, so that always gets missed when it's like, well, what, you think someone's just going to give you a top four? Yeah, they might. If it's Nikita Zaitsev, you can have them. You know, it's they're not all equal because they're in the top four.
Yeah, you're getting the four. You're not getting the one.
Exactly.
Out of the top four, right?
Exactly.
And other teams will move that guy. You've got to find him. Like, I know there's always been this smoke about Chris Tanev out here in Vancouver. And, you know, if you don't, like, Tanev doesn't do what he used to do. Injuries have really, really piled up on this guy. But he's not a fabulous puck mover. He's a defender. He's a good penalty killer. So what are you going to give up for him? And if you do, does that become, as you, in your words, like a value play? Well, it depends who you give up. Depends what his contract is. Depends what you're asking him to do. I think Duncan Keith has got a couple of good years in him, really good years. And then you get into the Hainsey years, right? You move him down, and you know what? What if Chicago's willing to take $1 million back if you sweeten the pot really well? And he becomes a 4-5 or a 4-2-5 guy. Maybe it's a little different.
Yeah. No, he's a rich man's Hainsey right now, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a name I pull out because Chicago's where they are. Right? Maybe you go to St. Louis and you poke around there as well because they're not going anywhere. Maybe you go to Toronto. Does Alex Martinez get you interested?
He's got, a year and a half left on his deal, too. Yeah. He's got more than – it's not just a rental.
Right. I mean, so maybe you've got something that interests the Kings in a player like that. So, heck, there's 100 different ways they could go here, but I would be stunned if we get to March 1st and they've got the same defense.
Yeah, me too. There's no way. They're not going into the playoffs with Justin Hall as their seventh defenseman.
No.
You know, it's not going to happen. They are going to make adjustments. All right, buddy. We got to fly. Enjoy the games tonight. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5.
So, Noodles is working and O is,
I don't know where O is today. Shockingly, he hasn't called in. I just assumed he's going to call in every day now. But, like, he's in Toronto. He's just sitting around.
Hey, way to enjoy your holiday. Call into the show. You could be working on.
I know. He lives 10 minutes from here, and he calls in. You know what he's going to do? He's going to call me tonight 15 times and be like, I'm so bored, man. And I'll be like, why don't you just come in tomorrow? Like, well, I can't do that. No explanation.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
No, not happening. So, anyway.
Okay, man. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
All right. Okay, you got it. There's Ray Ferraro, our hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline.